The children rejoice that they're going to see their father for the first time. For example, my little son Muhannad has never seen his father. Muhannad does not even know him. We had been promised that all the children will meet their father. Unfortunately, Muhannad was allowed to meet his dad, but his brother wasn't. The little child started crying. We begged them to let him go with his brother, but they turned a cold shoulder.
I love my dad. I miss him so much. I asked them for an hour to enter, but the Israelis refused. I was looking forward to hugging him.
The ICRC staff did their best to help us by all means. They relieved my fears of the visit. Honestly speaking, I was afraid and did not want to go. I refused the visit, but later when I met Abu Said, who came with the ICRC officers, I became quiet and calm. I thought that whatever happened in the prison would be safe with the ICRC officers.
ICRC is coordinating with Palestinian and Israeli authorities in order to allow Gazan detainees to receive visits from their families. During family visits, ICRC staff is always present at Erez checkpoint in order to facilitate the crossing.
The story begins here. A Palestinian family rejoiced in releasing his son from the Israeli occupation jails after 23 years of imprisonment.
I was very optimistic about being included in the first list of prisoners to be released. I spent 23 years in the prison and had to spend another 2 years of the sentence. I was not surprised so much by the release, but I was absolutely excited about it. But I wish the list had included some brothers of mine in the prison who were sentenced to life imprisonments rather than releasing me. Anyway, it was my destiny to be free, thanks Allah. When they brought us from the prison to Gaza and we found such a reception at Erez Crossing, we were very proud of our people, relatives, and the homeland. I met my beloved sons, family, relatives, and people.
I was tortured in isolated underground cells because I did not confess anything. In the beginning of my imprisonment, I refused to speak. Then I discovered I was pregnant. I announced a hunger strike, and my announcement way was different from the way now made by the prisoners.
Umm Mahmoud al-Zaq, a released prisoner, has suffered a lot from imprisonment. She withstood against torture apparatus. She was a good example in standing against the enemy and in belonging to home.
It was not just to say I announced hunger strike. I refused to have meals from the Israeli canteen, and I used to tell them, I do not have an appetite. This statement was my slogan, which confused the officers. It would have been easier for them if I simply said I was hunger striking.
With silently crying eyes seeking to meet their beloved imprisoned son and raising victory signs in reference to keep demonstration, as long as their sons are imprisoned in the Israeli jails, prisoners' families marched to the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC office in Gaza on Mondays, to send their message to the world. Abu Sharif, a father of a prisoner in Israeli jail, talks about prisoners' situation, suffering of prisoners' families, and their weekly demonstration.
The Monday demonstration is sacred. We have to demonstrate in solidarity with the prisoners. We call for prisoners' freedom and good treatment instead of maltreating them inside the Israeli jails.
The main players of the international community, they support Israel by a way or another, and they lived a long time ago in conspiracy of silence, which gives the Israel the green light to violate and to increase their violations against the Palestinians.
In the journey for covering another suffering, we met Omnidal, a mother of two long-term prisoners, aged and burdened with life bitterness. A journey of 1,000 miles begins here.
Dia was jailed at the age of 16 on October the 10th, 1992. Next month, Dia will be 22 years old. He executed a heroic resistance operation for the sake of his people and cause. This is why the Israelis arrested him. Muhammad, who is 22 years old, has been detained since he was 11. He was 11 when his brother was arrested. He's been imprisoned for 11 years. We used to visit him fortnightly. To us, the visit day was like a festival or a pilgrimage, actually as if we're going to visit the Prophet or the Kaaba. The night before the visit, we felt that we were really going to the Kaaba. There were our sons in the jail. It was absolute rejoice. We were not able to sleep the night before the visit. We stayed up all night waiting for the visiting time next day. But since the impose of the Shalit law, Gaza families have been prohibited from visiting their sons in prison.
Muhammad Nashabat, a recently released prisoner, is still receiving his friends and relatives telling them about the pains of the prison.
Interrogation was miserable. It was unbelievable. First of all, the investigation was psychiatric torture. I was tied by the hands and legs, and my head covered with a foul-smelling bag, my clothes torn and my body partially naked. The jailers used to force me to stay in this manner for 3 or 4 hours. Then they forced me to keep standing for 4 to 10 hours in miserable humiliation, sleepless, without looking at what was going on around me. I was not allowed to sleep or to sit down. When I surrendered to sleep, I was suddenly beaten. I suffered from this interrogative method for 28 days. International law, including the Fourth Geneva Convention, is applicable in occupied territories like Palestine, including the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Jerusalem. According to the convention, the law of war is applicable in these territories. So anyone arrested by a military occupation in occupied territories is called a civilian prisoner, not a prisoner of war. This is the general basis.
هذه هي القاعدة العامة.
حمل ثقيل يعني. هذا متجوز وعنده أسرة ونسوان ثنتين وبيت
ملوش. It is really a big burden. He is married and has a family and two wives. He does not have a house. They have lived in a room in my house since he was arrested. They suffer a lot. Even his first wife is not allowed to visit him in the prison. The absence of the father makes a big problem. In our Arab culture, the father, with the mother's assistance, is the only one who can raise his children well. So they suffer from his absence psychologically and socially.
Men's eyes do not tear, but refuse tyranny. The son and mother of the prisoner are preoccupied with unforgettable memories.
Sharif used to come here in the kitchen every Friday on his way to the mosque close to our place.
In the first week, I was not able to sleep or relax. I was tied by the hands and legs to a middle chair, bowing forward sometimes and backward with the hands tied to the legs from the back other times. I estimated these stays lasted from 8 to 10 hours each day. I was even prohibited from praying on the chair. During this week, I refused to talk about anything related to the occupied territories. I was tortured physically and psychologically.
طالما الأسر إبعاد الإنسان وسلخ الإنسان عن الحياة الطبيعية فله أثر شديد على.
As long as imprisonment isolates a human from a normal life, it has severe effects on his or her psychology and mentality. This means a human lacks a normal life and communication with people, and turns him or her to living an abnormal life. Sometimes, solitary confinement aims to deprive a human of his or her natural psychology and intellectuality. Imprisonment forces a human to live an abnormal life full of difficulties, isolated from normality, and deprived of a family and loved ones.
The prisoners who have been exiled from their own cities and families soon after being released participate in the demonstration of prisoners' families, calling for stopping oppressing sentences against the exiled and prisoners.
Exiling the Palestinians, who are the original population of the land, is a well-known Israeli policy and has been practiced by the occupation from 1948 until now. Its main goal is to replace the Palestinians with settlements and settlers in the West Bank. For this reason, the Israelis imposed wave of exile actions like the Marj al-Zohar exile, the exile of the Nativity Church, and those who were already exiled to prison. There was an occupation policy to get rid of the land's original population. The deported lost his heritage, his roots, his past, his life, his relationships, all his memories, his whole experience, his personality.
Israel used to transfer the Palestinians who are accused by Israel that they are dangerous and they have secret files against them as one of the extreme violations of the international law. The international law prevents the occupation and doesn't give the occupation the right to deport any Palestinian from his or her land. But they used this kind of violations or such decisions since long time ago against many Palestinians. Because Israel doesn't admit or recognize the international law.
بعد سبع سنين شفت ابني شوف ايش كانت حالتي
يعني. I saw my son after 7 years. You can imagine how I was waiting for his release. I could not know whether I was crying or confused. Looking at my watch for a while, laughing and crying for another, I was not able to utter a single word. Finally, when I saw Muhammad, I could not control my behavior. I started pulling him, and an Israeli soldier forcibly kept my son away. The soldier threatened me that if Muhammad and I would not stop pulling each other, he would not allow us to have a photo. Indeed, I wanted to hug my son rather than to have a photo with him.
كنا احنا يعني بدناش نتصور بس بدنا نحضر بعض
يوم بدنا نزوره بدنا 16 ساعه 15 ساعه.
Visiting a prisoner takes 15 to 16 hours. We walk to the ICRC office at 4 o'clock. Then a lot of procedures start, taking the buses to Erez Crossing, waiting until it opens, passing the crossing to a security search, and then returning to the buses for a journey of 2 hours to arrive at the prison.
I wish I could live until the time when my son is released. I've been told he might be included in the first or second list of prisoners to be released. I pray to God to see him. Why not to see him? I can feel my wish coming true.
prison prevented Muhammad Nashabat from bidding farewell to his mother before she had passed away. The crew accompanied Muhammad in his visit to the tomb. Yusuf is a child whose mother delivered him while she was imprisoned. Jail doors raised him in an endless flow of fear.
They deprived my baby from milk at the age of 2 months due to their claim that the Israeli milk companies closed. For me, the milk price was very expensive, so I weaned the baby off pressed milk and fed him bread and yogurt. Can you imagine this? Then the baby's temperature rose high and he had a convulsion. I thought I would lose my baby. And this all was because of the occupation's carelessness. The occupation never provided health care to the baby. He had not been checked by any doctor except one time. And I doubt whether that was a real doctor or an intelligence officer pretending.
Nashabat, the released prisoner, meets one of his prison friends after being released.
Welcome. How are you doing?
I am fine. How are you?
I am glad to see you.
How are your colleagues?
They are all fine. They send their warm greetings to you and wish you all the best.
Thank God for your release.
Thank you.
ما استخدموا معنا بس فقط اللي هو العذاب النفسي ولكن كمان انه العنف العنف بالفترة اللي فاتت كان اللي هي هزة الرقبة.
They impose not only psychological torture on us but also violence. The most violent torture we feared was shaking the neck or the chest because it resulted in the brain shaking. But thanks God, we passed this experiment well, so we can bear any difficulty for the sake of our fair cause. We have chosen this way ourselves. Nobody forced us to do so. During the test of jail, interrogation happened 5 or 6 times each night. 3 to 5 intelligence officers interrogated you in their office. They always spoke to us in an obscene tone, abusing and insulting us and our relatives. They aimed to weaken our will and self-confidence as Palestinian fighters.
كثير من الأحيان وأنت قاعد في الاعتقال أو في أي مكان آخر أنت بتعيد الشريط مرة أخرى قدام عينيك.
A prisoner always flashes back to the actions imposed on him in prison. These memories may also stimulate the ear, eye, and skin if the memories include torture. So the prisoner's mind becomes like a piece of sponge that absorbs events and actions in the jail from the beginning to the end. So the effects of imprisonment remain inside a human his whole life. Israeli violations towards the prisoners escalate every day. This can be noticed from the use of solitary confinement and torture, including some policies whose effects are not apparent, but leave an impact on all the prisoners. Israeli exile has many forms: interior, exterior, group, and individual. Individual exile is exiling a person from prison to a place out of his homeland or to the Gaza Strip. A good example is the case of the Nativity Church. Of 39 fighters, 26 were exiled to the Gaza Strip and 13 to European countries. So the forms and colors of exile policy the Israeli occupation applies are various.
They use the
78th item of the 4 Geneva Conventions, and they they analyze it according to their benefits, the Israel security benefit. Because one of the items of the conventions gives the occupation the right to impose any Palestinian to stay in his the same area, but not to transfer him from his own area to another geographical area, like what happened with these two in this case.
To me, the exiled person is similar to someone made naked in front of others. From this perspective, we found its effects dangerous to let such a person live with his memories far away. Even phone calls with his relatives could not compensate for his deprivation of his real environment, which he now misses.
The journey of suffering keeps on going, beginning from the ICRC office and ending in the Erez crossing, the line separating the Gaza Strip and the Israeli occupation. After this journey of challenge and humiliation ends, the relatives of the released prisoners can hardly meet their sons for a few minutes, a period that does not even get the mother's tears of this affecting meeting dried.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In an open letter read out on France Interradio on June 4th, 2020, prominent French novelist Virginie Despentes unequivocally slammed racism in French society, comparing savage treatment meted out to racial minorities and privileges accorded to whites. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. French novelist Virginie Despentes wrote, "In France, we are supposedly not racist, and yet the last time a waiter refused to serve me, I was with an Arab. The last time I was told to show my ID, I was with an Arab. The last time a person I was waiting for almost missed the train because police stopped her, she was black. A white person like me can move freely through the city without even noticing the police. I cannot forget I am a woman, but I can forget I am white. That's what it means to be white, to think about it or not, depending on your mood. In France, we are not racist, but I don't know a single black or Arab person who has such a choice." A week before that, a massive wave of protest had swept French cities against widespread racism in the country, with tens of thousands of people rallying in northern Paris to challenge the status quo. the unprecedented protests in France were inspired by the global movement of justice for minorities, triggered by the murder of George Floyd, a 46-year-old black American, by a white U.S. police officer, Derek Chauvin, in Minneapolis on May 20, 2020. The difference is that France pretends it doesn't happen. What happened in the U.S. happens here too in France. It's the same oppression and injustice. A 30-year-old man was told France 24 at the time. And 3 years on, nothing has changed. In fact, things have only become worse. Recently, a 17-year-old man of Algerian descent was shot and killed by trigger-happy French police in the Paris suburb of Nanterre, sparking fresh anti-racism protests in France. Nahel M's brutal killing has now become a rallying cry for persecuted racial minorities in France, who have for long suffered discrimination and violence and been forced into silence and submission. The vociferous chants of "We don't forget, we don't forgive" have reverberated across France, with all minorities cutting across ethnicities, joining the solidarity demonstrations. The slain teenager's diabolic murder could very well turn out to be the George Floyd moment for French minorities and reignite the long-suppressed movement for racial equality and justice. Activists have for long accused the French authorities of treating people of color differently from whites. And there's ample examples to prove that the accusations are not humbug, but based on facts. The memories of Adam Traoré, a black French man of Malian descent who died after being arrested by French police in the suburbs of northern Paris on July 19, 2016, are still fresh. Medical reports established that immobilization and handcuffing contributed to Traoré's asphyxiation. Assa Traoré, his sister, after Floyd's murder by American police in June 2020, said the two men of color in two different countries died in exactly the same way. And both families were denied justice. She said at a protest on June 2, 2020, "Today we are not just talking about the fight of Traoré family. It is the fight for everyone. When we fight for George Floyd, we fight for Adama Traoré. What is happening in the United States is an echo of what is happening in France." Before Traoré, many people of color in France perished in police custody, with their harrowing stories unheard and untold. For example, the story of three teenagers who were rushing home one fine afternoon in 2005 in a Paris suburb after playing football and were chased by police for no reason. The terrified children, between 15 and 17, took cover in an electricity station, and two of them, Zaid Bena and Buna Traoré, eventually died of electrocution, and Mohitin Altan sustained severe burns. A study conducted in 2017 by an independent French human rights group revealed that young men in the country seen as black or Arab were 20 times more likely to be apprehended by police than whites. In December 2022, Reuters reported that French police had issued 58 COVID-related fines per 1,000 people in the five Paris districts with majority ethnic minorities, which was about 40% higher than the rate of other areas with predominantly white populations. More recently, in February this year, An astonishing report on racism in France by the Representative Council of France's Black Associations, CRAN, revealed that 91% of respondents in mainland France said they have been victims of racial discrimination often or from time to time. And 85% respondents admitted to being victims of discrimination owing to their black skin. The absolute and widespread nature of the phenomenon is particularly striking. We see the progression of hateful ideas on the internet and in public debate. Patrick Lozès, CRAN founder and its first president, was quoted as saying by Le Monde at the time. The 17-year-old teenager's killing, experts believe, has again exposed deep fault lines of racial discrimination and violence in France, with French police using disproportionate force against protesters. More than 1,300 protesters have been arrested so far in France, according to reports, with the government deploying around 50,000 police personnel in major cities to quell or suppress the angry protest. He saw a little Arab-looking kid. He wanted to take his life. His mother was quoted as saying in local media, "A police officer cannot take his gun and fire at our children, take our children's lives," she said. Recently, UN Human Rights Officer spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani at a news briefing in Geneva expressed concern over the incident, calling it a moment for the country to seriously address the deep issues of racism and discrimination in law enforcement. Nahel's tragic murder, as it appears, has galvanized racial minorities in France the way Floyd's ghastly killing brought together Asian Americans and African Americans in the U.S.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai are the guest speakers for today's discussion. Sheikh Rouhani, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Fadai, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most prominent events of the history of Islam, and that is Qadir event, in which Imam Ali alayhi salam was officially and by the order of Allah selected as the true and main successor to Prophet Muhammad. What lessons can we take from Qadir event? Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you. First of all, give us a background of the Qadir event. What was it exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you know, Hadith of Qadir is the Hadith mutawatir.
Yes.
That we can say uninterruptedly narrated by many of the Ashabs and the companions of the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi. And in Ghadir Khum, when the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, in his last journey to Hajj, for Hajj, he gathered the people when he was returning from, let's say, Mecca to Medina. In a place called Ghadir, he gathered all the Hujjaj, the companions of the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And there, actually, the Holy Prophet ﷺ presented a sermon, a khutbah.
Yes.
Which is a very meaningful, a very helpful and useful khutbah, and we can say lecture, that was presented by the Holy Prophet ﷺ. So one of the aspects of this khutbah is the appointment of Amirul Mu'mineen Ali ﷺ as the caliph, as the imam, as the waliullah, by the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So it is one of the important aspects of that khutbah.
Okay.
But in that khutbah, we have lots of moral kind of teachings. religious kind of teachings. I mean, aqaid and Islamic beliefs are there. Yes. Moralities, moral and ethical teachings are there. And of course, the Holy Prophet ﷺ made very nice du'as and prayers in that khutbah, particularly for Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ﷺ. So in terms of, we can say, moral teachings, let's say spiritual teachings, and aqaid and Islamic beliefs teaching, so all of them are important in that khutbah. But from political aspect, again, it is really significant that the Holy Prophet ﷺ appointed Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ﷺ as wali, as amir, as the leader of the ummah and the nation after him. So politically, it was really, really important.
That's
and
right.
The Holy Prophet ﷺ invited the people to follow Amir al-Mu'mineen, to accept him as their leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other aspect is the social aspect of this event
right.
in the history of Islam, that the Prophet ﷺ gathered the Hujjaj from different kind of, let's say, countries or provinces
mm-hmm.
and different cities, even different, we can say, races or tribes. So to unite them under the, let's say, flag of Islam and under the wilaya of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salatu
wa salam.
Because the Prophet knew that under the guardianship or under the leadership of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salatu wa salam, his ummah, his nation, will remain united, united. And then this, the unity of Muslims was very much significant for the Holy Prophet. That's why you see that when the Prophet gathered all the Muslims from different tribes, different even nations, nationalities even, because they were Force or Persians, they were Arabs, non-Arabs, you know, all the people were there. So the Holy Prophet gathered all of them and addressed all of them
right.
to follow Amir al-Mu'mineen, to accept Amir al-Mu'mineen as their imam and as their leader, and to make a united ummah, a united nation from Muslims. And that's why it was really significant khutbah in the history of Islam.
That's right. It was not a personal decision by Prophet Muhammad to select Imam Ali alayhi salam as his successor, was it, Shaykh?
No, of course it was a divine decision that Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam made it. And, you know, if we think that Qadir is something especially for Shia, and it was just a personal decision, which is, we can call it for Shia, it is wrong. Why? First of all, we can say that at that time, we didn't have the division of Sunni and Shia. So how can we say that it was just only for Shia? So when before the time of caliphate, before the time of Imamah of Amir al-Mu'mineen, it happened at the time of Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So we cannot call it special.
So for example, some specific people call Shia follow Ali and some others not.
We didn't have that decision at that time. This is the main, the first reason. And the second reason that it was not special, it was not based on denomination, that the first people who congratulated Amir al-Mu'mineen were the two caliphs, Abu Bakr and Umar. They congratulated Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. So what does it mean? Even they, even Sunni people, they have it in their books of hadith. It is not something that we say. They congratulate. That is for sure. All of them accept. All the Sunni scholars accept that. I will say. So, what is the difference between Shia and Sunni? They congratulated him, Amir al-Mu'mineen, because of his position. So, this is not special. And then this was accepted and acknowledged by their caliphs. So what is the difference? So if we accept that even, and they accept it, they congratulate it, and they have it in their book, the only difference is how to interpret the term of Mawla. And kunta Mawla fahada Aliyan Mawla. We say that Mawla means imam, with mean leader.
Yes.
Means leader. They say Mawla means friend. But there is a question. How is it possible that a person, a wise person like prophets, that all people know that this is not a usual and ordinary person. He is stopped all the people from different countries and tribes, and they had to wait a lot. Where in the middle of a desert, and they waited for the people who didn't arrive. Mm-hmm. And as you know, they were there at the place, Qadir-e-Khum. They waited, stayed there for 3 days in order to give allegiance to Imam Ali. 3 days.
Okay.
So, and
to,
in
parentheses,
we can say celebrations of Qadir should be at least 3 days because of that, not just 1 day. So how is it possible to stop people for 3 days at the middle of desert, you know, just to say that this is my friend and it should be yours as well? So they know that
the they know that Prophet Muhammad loved Imam Ali. Yeah,
and most of people loved Imam Ali as well.
That's right.
So the event is accepted and acknowledged, and the congratulations was written in their book. The only difference is how to interpret, which their interpretation cannot be accepted. So if we accept that Prophet stopped people in that middle of desert in just in order to say that I like him, so we cannot call him a wise person, let alone to call him a prophet. So all Muslims can acknowledge that, as we have even some Sunni people here in our country, in Iran, they celebrate the day of Qadir.
Yes.
They respect that. So it's not good to make this event a center for fighting between Muslims. You know, talking scientifically is something else. So we have celebration together. Why not? Because all of us accept that. It is written in all of our books.
That's right. Ayatul Tabligh, Ayatul Ikmal, you know, all these ayahs have been revealed, confirming the position of Imama.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
But Sheikh Rouhani, what historical lessons can we take from Qadir event? I mean, was there any, for example, I do want to say, when not accepting the imamate of Imam Ali alayhi salam after event of Qadir, what happened to the Muslim Ummah and what lessons can we take from it?
You know, first of all, we should know that the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in that khutbah termed Amir al-Mu'mineen as Mawla. He used the title Mawla for Imam Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. Then later, there were some kind of different interpretations of the term Mawla. So one of these interpretations on which all of the Muslims agree on is this, that Mawla means the beloved one, or the one whom we should love.
Yes.
This is Mawla. This is one of the meanings of Mawla that is mostly used by Sunnites or by the Sunni scholars, saying that, okay, the Holy Prophet told us that we should love Ali alayhi salatu wasalam.
Yes.
And we do love him. You know?
Okay.
It doesn't mean the leadership, it doesn't mean the guardianship. So suppose that even if this title Mawla means the one whom we should love, now the question is that after the demise of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasalam, did really the companions, the followers of this hadith and the Holy Prophet, did they express their love to the Holy Imam?
Even if it is love.
Yeah, even if it means Mawla. Now the question is that what happened? Very soon after the demise of the Holy Prophet, what happened to the house of Amir al-Mu'mineen? And what happened to the daughter of the Holy Prophet, the wife of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam? And what happened to the children of the Prophet?
Yes.
And the children of Amir al-Mu'mineen. So his history is very clear.
It's clear about it, that's right.
No one can doubt.
Yes.
So why, if Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam was the one whom you should love? Another question is that, I'm not going to the details about these events that occurred after the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, but the other question is really this, that suppose that you love the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. If you love the Holy Prophet, do you follow the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? Do you obey or disobey him? Okay?
Okay.
So the Prophet said that you should love Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. So doesn't it mean that you have to follow Amir al-Mu'mineen?
Mm-hmm.
If you love someone,
yes,
he is like a role model for you.
Yes.
You know?
As like I am your Mawla,
exactly,
he said.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you, as you rightly mentioned, if the Holy Prophet says that, Man kuntu Mawla, whomsoever I am his Mawla, his Lord, or his, let's say, guardian, then Ali is Mawla, the master of those people. Now the question is that, did you follow the Holy Prophet? Did you follow Ali alayhi salatu wasalam? Suppose that it means mahabba, it means hub, devotion, or love.
Yes.
Then the question is that, why didn't you love Ali alayhi salatu wasalam after the demise of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? What did you do with Ali? You know, the most knowledgeable ashab.
Yes.
The most brave one.
Yes.
The one who sacrificed for Islam more than each one of those companions. The one who deserved, you know, look at the Minhaj al-Karama written by Allama Hilli Ridwanullah ta'ala alayhi.
Yes.
If you go to that book, you see Allama Hilli Ridwanullah ta'ala alayhi first tried to prove that the characteristic or the character of Amir al-Mu'mineen based on the Holy Quran. Fada'il and virtues of Amir al-Mu'mineen, 40 ayah.
Yes.
40 ayahs of the Quran mentioned by Allama Hilli. And then many riwayat, ahadith, authentic ahadith from both Sunni and Shia. Then historical events. Then rational, aql, reason. Then Allama Hilli asked this question that, okay, the one who was, in terms of ayat Quran, in terms of ahadith, in terms of reason and aql, in terms of history.
Yes.
He was the best one among the companions of the Holy Prophet. What did you do with this best person? You know?
That's right.
This is the question that if a Sunni Muslim, our brothers,
yes,
if they really love the Holy Prophet, if they really love Amir al-Mu'minin, Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, how can they express their hatred towards the Ali alayhi salatu wasalam?
Or at least not expressing their love.
And the children Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. What happened to Ali alayhi salatu wasalam? Where were you? If you loved Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, where were you?
And why for 25 years this love was postponed?
Exactly.
Because as the fourth caliph, finally they had to refer to Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
Okay, that's right.
This is the question that should be answered by them.
There are so many doubts and questions and lessons that we can take from this event. Okay, Sheikh Fadai, your final remarks?
You know, about the lessons that we can take from this event, I want to mention that there are three lessons we can take from that. The first point, the first lesson is the special and significant position of Imam Ali. Whether we interpret that to interpret Mullah to the one who we love or the one who we should follow. Anyway, Prophet told people that as you love me, you should love him. So why this person? What about other companions? There were hundreds and thousands of Muslims, good companions. We had Salman, we had Abu Zar, we had Miqdad. Well, lots of good Muslims. So what does it mean, gather all people at the middle of desert? It means that this one is different.
That's
so
right.
Generally, we should accept the different position, high position of Imam Ali, at least social position of Imam Ali alayhi, at least. So this is the first lesson.
Yes.
This person is different. He has a social position among Muslim during the history of Islam. The second lesson is how to follow the leader of society, Islamic society. You know, at that time, Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Alastu awla bikum min anfusikum." Awla means priority.
Yes.
Don't you accept my priority upon you yourself. I know you better than you, and I can order you as you cannot order yourself. If I decide for you yourself, you have to follow. After this sentence, أَلَسْتُ أَوْلَى بِكُمْ مِنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ, he says, مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَى. So what does أَوْلَى and مَوْلَى says when we compare it together? So this is how we follow a leader of society. So the priority should be considered. This is the second. The real way of following the leader of society with this priority. And the last point about this event is that I want to mention a story said by Mr. Garati,
yes,
one of our scholars, Islamic scholars. He said once, I was in a meeting, in a conference, international conference, that all the scholars, different scholars from different denominations of Islam were there. At that conference, with a lot of Shia and Sunni scholars, he said, I told them now that all of Islamic scholars gathering here, yes, I have a request. They were waiting. He said, I said, we believe in awaited imam, and you believe in awaited imam. Is it like that? They accepted, all of them.
Yes.
And then he said, so let's choose it now. We are together. We are scholars, Shia scholars, Sunni scholars, different denominations of Shia and different denominations of Sunni and sects. Let's decide together and solve the problem of earth.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we wait? Can we choose him? They said, no, of course we cannot. It should be chosen by God. And then he said, if you cannot choose the last imam, how did you choose the first imam?
Mm-hmm.
And if it was possible to choose the first one, how isn't it possible to choose the last one?
Yes.
So there isn't any logical reason to make this difference. This is the lesson that we can take from Qadir.
So you mean Qadir event was based on Allah's order?
Allah's order. Yes, we, yes, about Prophet, we say, مَا يَنْتَغَ عَنِ الْحَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَ إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوهَىٰ. And about this question, whether it is personal or not, there was a person called Harith al-Fahri.
Yes.
After this sermon of Prophet, he came to Prophet ﷺ and said, we followed whatever you said. You said we should go to jihad and fight. We did. You ordered us to do prayer, to fast. But what about this? Is it personal decision or from God? He said, of course, it is from God. It is divine. And he said, if it is from God, so ask that God to send a stone on my head. And at the same time, a stone from the sky, yes, was sent to his end, and he was dead and killed. That is the miracle of, yeah, Qadir.
One of the proofs of Qadir, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, it's mentioned, yes, it's mentioned in Quran, سَأَلَ سَأَلٌ بَعَذَابٍ وَاقِعٍ, and in the interpretation, Islamic scholars accept that this is about that event, the miracle of Qadir.
That's right. As I said, so many lessons can be taken from Qadir event. And even nowadays, if the Muslims want to be united, the story of Qadir event can be a nice milestone in order to get into unity among themselves. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice explanation regarding the event of Qadir. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.ir. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the Limelight.
In the United States, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has asked President Joe Biden to issue a major disaster declaration for the 3rd of February trail derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, that released massive amounts of toxic chemicals. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine on Monday, 3rd of July, asked President Joe Biden to issue a major presidential disaster declaration over the Norfolk Southern Trail derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, a tool to guarantee federal aid in the future. The Ohio community is still dealing with the environmental and health-related fallout from the chemical disaster propelled by the 3rd of February derailment. Monday, 3rd of July, was the deadline the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, set for Mike DeWine to make the request after the agency gave DeWine an extension on 7th of March to decide whether to make the request. The possibility remains that the voluntary support provided by Norfolk Southern could at some point in the future cease, and this declaration is needed to ensure that the state and the federal government use all resources available to step in and provide the community with needed assistance, Mike DeWine said in his letter to President Biden. DeWine's office expressed concern that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA's, help could still be needed if Norfolk Southern's voluntary aid subsides, and there could be future costs that have yet to be identified. Because of the unique nature of this incident, the state is still working to identify current needs and evaluate the future impacts of this disaster that this disaster will have on individuals and the wider community, Mike DeWine wrote. The incident had immediate physical and mental health effects on the community, and the Ohio Department of Health engaged with the Department of Health and Human Services to establish a clinic in the community. However, the long-term health impacts are unknown. In addition to the physical and mental health impacts, there have been economic impacts. Homeowners and businesses have seen property value decline and loss of business as people are hesitant to come into the community. Mike DeWine, a Republican, said the state will comply with any applicable cost-sharing requirements associated with specific programs. President Biden said he would visit East Palestine, although he has yet to do so. The heads of the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and the Department of Transportation have visited the community. After the train derailment, Mike DeWine said President Biden contacted him and offered any federal assistance necessary. "Look, the president called me and said, anything you need. I have not called him back after that conversation," DeWine said at the time. "We will not hesitate to do that if we're seeing a problem or anything, but I'm not seeing it right now." The cable broadcaster CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has asked President Joe Biden to issue a major disaster declaration for the 3rd of February train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, that released massive amounts of toxic chemicals into the environment, triggered evacuations and extensive ongoing cleanup operations. In his letter to President Biden, the Republican Governor Mike DeVine said the declaration is needed to ensure